Well, hello, my friends, and welcome to Hope for Your Heart. This is Pastor Calvin Corbett with Hickory Ridge Community Church in Chesapeake, Virginia, coming to you today. I'm so glad that you're tuning in today on this Monday broadcast, and we're just coming off a very exciting weekend. And I know as you listen to this broadcast, you're about a week or two behind where we are in what the life of our church and what's happening in our church. But yesterday we had with us John Cash, and John Cash was a weatherman here on Wavy News 10 for many years, and he's moved out to Los Angeles. He's a businessman, and hopefully he'll be moving back to this area one day soon. But he gave a message yesterday, and we are in the middle of raising some money for a very important endeavor. That's right, we are raising money to build a church in Nigeria. And you can have a part in that if you are interested. But we have already exceeded the goal that we had set to raise money for this church building. And I'm so proud of those who gave generously for this endeavor. And yesterday in our offering, we had a very good size offering. So throughout the last 3 or 4 weeks, we have raised $28,000 to build a church in Nigeria. So I hope that Pastor Friday, when he comes back here to visit us in the United States, I'm going to try to coerce him to do a broadcast. So at least you'll get to meet him. And when he does come, I'll kind of let you know what his schedule is and what churches he'll be speaking on at the local area so that you can go by and see him in person. And I hope that the next time he comes to see us that he'll have his wife Precious with him, and she can kind of share what's happening in the ministry along with what God's doing through not only their church but also the orphanage and their school. And they have an amazing Christian school there in Nigeria with several hundred students there in this school, and so God is just using them in a very, very special way. So thank you for being part of that. Thank you for praying for them. Thank you for praying for us as we minister throughout the Hampton Roads area. I am so convinced that God does powerful things through prayer. As a matter of fact, one preacher said one time, God does nothing but answer prayer. And so today, as we begin this new week, I wanted to continue on with the series that we're doing. And it's really a series on the family and how to have a good family, how to have a godly family, how to begin a family in a way that's pleasing to God, how to have a family that just glorifies God in all areas. And we can have a family that glorifies God because God has given us his wonderful book, the Bible, and that gives us everything that we need to know on how to be the dads that we need to be, the moms that we need to be, how to be the church leaders that we need to be, how to be the husbands and the wives that we need to be. I'm so thankful for the Word of God. But when you think about marriage, you think about the start of a family. A family always begins when a man and a woman come together in holy matrimony. And there's something about the love between a husband and a wife that cannot be matched on any other level. I think that when God wanted to display to us and give us a physical example of what love was like, I think that's why he said, I'm going to put a husband and a wife together, and that is going to be the strongest love bond within humanity. And I begin by sharing you the story. This is a true story by a pastor by the name of E.V. Hill. Pastor Hill was an African-American pastor in the Watts section of Los Angeles. He has gone on to be with the Lord. But while he was a pastor, he was a Baptist preacher, and he got caught up in some of this racial tension, and he was taking up a stand, and there were other black pastors who were with him taking up the stand against all the rioting that was taking place back then in the 80s back in the Los Angeles area. And many pastors had been really involved in this, and they were experiencing kickback. And those who were running these riots were actually coming against the pastors. As a matter of fact, one day E.V. Hill got a threatening phone call, and he was told on this phone call that if he didn't stop his involvement with the racial conflict, that he would be killed. They told him that they would put a bomb in his car. Well, the next day when he woke up, he noticed that his wife was not there. When he looked out into his garage, his car was gone and his wife was gone. And he looked out the window wondering what happened to her. And as he's looking out the window, he sees that his wife was driving up into the driveway. And as he's driving into the driveway, he runs out to the car and asks her where she had gone and what she was doing. And so when she was asked that question, she said this. She said, I heard there was going to be a bomb in this car, and I did not want that bomb to explode on you. So I took the car out for a drive this morning. He said after that happened that he would never question her love for him. You know, that's the kind of commitment and love that inspires somebody to take and risk their lives for somebody else. Isn't that the Christian model set by Jesus himself, giving his very life for us? So let's talk about marriage, and let's talk about the benefits of marriage. You know, when you think about getting married, we all have these concepts of a fairy tale type of wedding. And unfortunately, many of these fairy tale weddings end up as horror stories. We've all seen that things get off and they get started so right, and then they end up oftentimes so wrong. Well, how does that happen? Well, sadly, marriages deteriorate in three different stages. They start off with harmony, and then they move to hostility, and then eventually they move to apathy. You see, they start off doing well, and there's harmony, and we're in love, and everything is great, and there's this great blissfulness to the relationship. But then as time goes by, we begin to have hostility as we start fighting all the time. We're picking at each other or angry all the time. Now, if you don't get some resolution in that stage, it moves to apathy. We just don't care anymore. You don't care about working on the marriage. You don't care about working on the relationship. You don't care about the feelings of your spouse. You kind of just throw up your hands in the air and just give up. You see, apathy will kill any marriage. In Romans chapter 4, we learn that God can raise the dead and he can bring it back to life because God creates new things. As a matter of fact, as we look at the rest of Romans chapter 4, verse number 18, it says this, "Against all hope, Abraham in hope believed, and so became the father of many nations, just as it had been said to him. So shall your offspring be." Without weakening in his faith, he faced the fact that his body was as good as dead, since he was about to be 100 years old, and that Sarah's womb was also dead. Yet he did not waver through unbelief regarding the promise of God, but was strengthened in his faith, and he gave glory to God, being fully persuaded that God had the power to do what he had promised. So as you think about a marriage today, I want you to know there are four wrongs that every marriage will encounter. You're going to go through this cycle, okay? So you might as well go ahead and be ready for it and be prepared for it. You begin with a marriage and you have these unrealistic expectations. You have these expectations that your spouse is going to be there for you and your spouse is going to meet all of your needs. They are very unrealistic expectations. As a matter of fact, I was doing a survey and a study one time on the divorce rate within Christians versus non-Christians. And I was really shocked to find out that the rate of divorce is about the same. And as I got thinking about that, I said, why in the world would the divorce rate be about the same with Christians and non-Christians? Well, the divorce rate is about the same because of this matter of expectations. As Christians, we have higher expectations for our spouses. We have unrealistic expectations for our spouses. We expect them to fulfill a role that only God can fulfill. So the world doesn't have that expectation, so they give up easier on a marriage. Where a Christian has certain expectations that their spouse will do certain things, but because they cannot do that, they also end up in divorce. The second thing that will be wrong in every marriage is not only the unrealistic expectation, but unaccepted differences. We are different. We are very different, and we must realize how different we are. We don't often like to accept these differences. As we go through our lives, we realize that resentment over those differences can cause a major matter of frustration. You know, after we marry somebody that we're attracted to, we're always attracted to somebody who is opposite to us. And they say opposites attract, but then we discover that opposites also attack. You see, what was once fascinating us is now frustrating us. It irritates us. This is the kind of an interesting thing because God wired us in such a way that we naturally seek out people who complement us, people who are different than we are. In fact, it's fascinating to meet somebody that's a little bit different than who you are. For example, people who are very structured in their lives tend to seek out people who are not very structured, the people that are very spontaneous. Why? Because we're different. Isn't that interesting how God wired us? People who are reserved tend to seek out those who are more outgoing. There's something attractive about that. You see, at first, we're fascinated with opposites, but then we discover that this fascination quickly turns into resentment. One guy told me one time, "I knew I was marrying Mrs. Wright. I just didn't know her first name was Always." As you think about that, when you get married, that's what happens. You marry Mr. Wright, and you discovered his first name is Always Right. Did you know that God's number one tool for bringing about holiness in your life? Now, this may blow your mind, right? So hang on to your seat, right? Make sure you get your seatbelt on, because you may not agree with this, okay? But God's number one tool to make you more like Jesus, to make you more sanctified, if you're married, is your partner. That's right, your mate, your husband or your wife. God uses your husband or your wife more than any other tool in your life to help you to grow spiritually. You see, when you get married, you realize just how selfish you are. You realize how much of a globehead you are. And so God brings somebody into your life, a wife or a husband, and as you're going through life, you discover that nobody has it all together. And because nobody has it together, you have got to learn to get along with somebody who doesn't have it together. So God's number one tool in your life to grow you up, to make you more like Him, is the differences between you and your mate. Now, I discovered that the greater your differences are, the more potential for spiritual power in your marriage. Now, I don't worry about marriages where people are really different. I worry about marriages where the people are too much alike. I was counseling a couple one time, and I kept asking them, well, what is your major source of differences? What are your major sources of conflict? And they kept telling me over and over and over again, well, we just like each other. We agree with everything. We don't have any disagreements. And I had a little check in my head as I'm listening to this. I said, this is too good to be true. Maybe I'm an oddball, but my wife and I, we have our series of conflicts, okay? And now thankfully we learned how to work those conflicts out, but we weren't married even a week before we had our first major fight as a couple. They had the very first week. Thankfully, we made it through the honeymoon stage and we got past that, but we had conflict very early and we had to learn how to resolve conflict. You know, by the way, that couple that said they never fought, their marriage lasted 6 months. I guess they were not being honest about the level of conflict within their relationship. Well, here's a third thing that you're going to have in a marriage that will be a wrong that every marriage will encounter. We talked first about unrealistic expectations, unaccepted differences, and thirdly, we're talking about unresolved issues. You know, the worst unresolved issues aren't the ones that were created in your marriage. They're the ones that you brought into your marriage from things you learned from your family. You see, when you got married, you weren't like a blank slate. You grew up in a family that had certain ways of doing things, habits and patterns and ways of doing things that you thought were normal. Your spouse grew up in another family with habits and patterns and ways of doing things, and they thought they were quite normal. I tell people oftentimes, I says, my wife and I come from totally different backgrounds. I come from a family that is more high-strung and a New England family, okay? And then I married a laid-back Southerner and from Virginia, born right here in Portsmouth, Virginia, in the old Portsmouth Naval Hospital. If you've been around this area for any length of time, you know what hospital I'm talking about. So I married somebody who's very laid back, his family's very laid back, and she marries a family of high energy, always wanting to do things, family. So that created some tension within our marriage in the early days. And if you're not careful with that, those differences can lead to bitterness. In Ephesians 4:31 and 32, it says, let all bitterness, let all wrath and anger and clamor and slander, put those far away from you, along with all malice, and be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, as God in Christ forgave you. You see, when you think about marriage, marriage really doesn't create problems. Marriage will reveal problems. It shows us the areas in our lives that we need to work on. All of us come into a marriage and we carry baggage into our marriage. It's like you've got this great big garbage sack on your back and you carry it into your marriage. You carry your hurts, you carry all these habits, all these hang-ups from your previous family into this new marriage. And the more pain you had growing up in your family, the more baggage you're carrying into your marriage and the more problems you're going to have to resolve. You see, marriage doesn't create problems. It only reveals problems. Now, if you had been single all of your life and you never got married, you could go through some life without dealing with certain problems. I mean, if you never get married, you don't have to worry about being selfish. I mean, it's only you that you have to worry about. But as you get married, you discover there's some hurts and there's some habits and there's some hang-ups and there's some things that really bug you And now that you are with somebody, it's actually squeezing you and it's bringing those issues to the surface. So marriage doesn't create problems, it only reveals them. But marriage also brings into this relationship many more flaws than we could ever imagine. You see, in many ways, your family sets you up for both success and failure. In your family, you learn some great strengths, but you also learn some great weaknesses. And as you bring far more weaknesses into the marriage than strength into the marriage, you discover that you will start fighting over these issues. And some are still reacting to things that happened in their past. They're still reacting to them in the present. And now maybe your parents, one or both of them, were controlling, for example. Or maybe they didn't pay attention to you. Or maybe they didn't affirm you enough. But for whatever reason, in your past, you have some resentments. You've got some anger. You've come with some great problems and some great grudges, and they're stored up against your parents. And then you come into marriage. And any time that your spouse even remotely reminds you about the thing that you hated so much in a parent, controlling or domineering or wouldn't listen, or whatever it was, it could be 100 different things. Then you tend to take all that anger from the past, which you never resolved, and you turn it and you focus it on one person, the one that you love the most. Well, there's a fourth thing that we bring into marriages, and that will be a wrong that we have to deal with. We talked about unrealistic expectations, and we talked about unaccepted differences and unresolved issues. But the fourth thing is unforgiven mistakes. You know, the mistakes that we have made that we haven't dealt with, the areas in our lives that we haven't forgiven, the areas in our lives that we have these barriers that have built up, these areas of hostility or these areas of apathy. You see, the truth is because we're imperfect, we hurt each other intentionally sometimes and sometimes unintentionally. We sin and we fail. We are selfish. And the truth is you are going to be hurt in life. And the person who has the greatest potential to hurt you is the person that you love the most. Now, that's why forgiveness must become a daily habit within a marriage. Marriages need massive and heavy doses of forgiveness because we are far from perfect. You know, if you hold on to your hurts in marriage, if you hold on to these mistakes and you don't let them go, if you don't forgive, then these wounds will fester and they get worse and worse and worse. What is the worst sin in marriage? I know what you think it is. It's not adultery. The worst sin in marriage is unforgiveness. Unforgiveness is the worst sin in marriage. Why? Because it's the one that holds every other sin captive. Hebrews chapter 12, 15 says this, "We are to look after each other so that none of you fails to receive the grace of God. Watch out that no poisonous root of bitterness grows up to trouble you, corrupting many. See that no one is sexually immoral or godless like Esau, who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son. Afterward, as you know, when he wanted to inherit this blessing, he was rejected. He could bring about no change of mind, though he sought the blessing with tears." What are we learning here about Esau? Esau fell into sexual immorality because he refused to deal with his sin, that single sin of selfishness, that sin of wanting to sell out his inheritance for a mess of pottage. It was a little thing that went unresolved, unforgiven, and turned into a big thing. You see, it's that one offense that you won't let go that will bring you down. You have been forgiven by God, and God expects you to forgive others. When you hold on to your hurt, you are perpetuating the pain. You see, you don't make it better, you make it worse. You never make a grudge better by nursing it and rehearsing it. You only make it better by forgiving it. And if you are holding on to that grudge and you are using something that happened in the past as leverage and you're holding it over your spouse, you are the one that is destroying your marriage. You may ask, well, why would anybody do that? Why would anybody hold on to hurt intentionally? Obviously, it doesn't feel good. When you're full of resentment, it hurts you more than it hurts the other person. So why would I intentionally hold on to unforgiveness in my heart? Well, I'll tell you why. We do it to soothe our own guilt and to use it as ammunition. You see, in our minds, we've got this scale. And every time that I've done something wrong or you've done something wrong, I put it on this scale. I don't want to feel guilty, so the way I balance my guilt is by blaming my stuff on you. When they say, you did this, I can say, but you did that. We try to justify everything by holding on to it as ammunition to get the other person back. That will sink a marriage. Dennis Rainey said this, oneness in marriage involves complete unity with each other. It's more than a mere mingling of two humans. It's a tender merging of the body, the soul, and the spirit. Well, let's talk about the ABCs of a sweet marriage. And I'm going to start this list today, and we're going to finish it up in the broadcast tomorrow. But let's get through the first couple of sweet starts to a marriage. Letter A is I've got to accept responsibility for my past hurt. Each person must be responsible for himself. Galatians 6:5. Now, this is a very interesting passage because in the first part of Galatians, it says that we are to carry one another's burdens. But then we get down to verse number 5, and it says that each person must carry their own burden or their own cross. So which one is it? Are we supposed to carry each other's burdens, or are we supposed to carry our own burdens? To which I say, yes. You say, how do I make the distinction between the two? There are some things that you must take responsibility for. My personal sin, I must take personal responsibility for. When it comes to carrying the burdens of other people, this is when they're involved in a situation that is outside of their control. This is a situation where a person has something that happens to them. I mean, if your neighbor's house burns down, that's a burden that's too big for them to carry by themselves. So as a good neighbor, you go over there and say, hey, let me help you. Here's a meal. Here, why don't you come and you can stay with us until your house gets rebuilt. Can I help you with anything? That's bearing one another's burdens. When it comes to the matter of sin, each person is responsible for their own sins. You see, you cannot control your spouse's actions. You can't control your spouse's attitudes. You can keep your spouse in love with you. You can't force them rather to love you. You can't even force them to say they're going to be respectful of you. You can't force them to stay in love with you. You don't have that control over them. But you do have control over your response. You see, the only way you can change him or her is by changing yourself. And that changes the equation. You see, when you're different, they have to relate to you in a new way. So you start on, not on them, but you accept the responsibility for your part. So what does this mean? Number one, it means I am going to stop having a pity party about my marriage. You stop comparing your spouse to somebody else. You see, that's so destructive. You should never do that. It never solves any problems. It only makes matters worse. You stop comparing your marriage to the marriages of other people. You know, I don't really like the word compromise, especially when it comes to this time of the year where we're getting ready to vote. And I don't want to vote for a candidate who always is compromising their core beliefs. I want to vote for somebody who will not compromise. But when it comes to marriages, you've got to compromise in some areas. I'm not talking about right and wrong within a marriage, but you got to figure out what works for you based upon where you are in your marriage. Stop complaining about your marriage. You know, it's a big waste of energy and time. Stop resenting your marriage. You know, as you do that, you're wasting a lot of energy. The energy that you waste on criticizing your spouse or resenting your marriage could be energy that could be used as a positive way. Don't blame your spouse for your unhappiness. You know, as you think about happiness, you and I are about as happy as we choose to be. Nobody else can control the level of happiness in our lives. Nobody can make me happy. Nobody can make me unhappy. No one else can make you unhappy. You see, it's a choice. It's how you respond to life. Even when you come to this relationship with God, you are as close to God as you want to be. You're as happy as you want to be. Do you want to be happier? Get closer to God. That's a choice. Nobody's keeping you away from God. You see, the closer you get to God, the happier you're going to be because that's where true happiness comes. As you think about improving your marriage, if you're always daydreaming and denying and defending, you won't fix your marriage. You can't fix the problems of your spouse. You can only fix your own issues. So start by accepting responsibility for your marriage. You know, so many times we think, well, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. You know, the grass is greener where you water it and fertilize it. If you took as much time watering and fertilizing your own relationship instead of wishing and wanting and complaining, the grass would start to grow greener. You see, the biggest barrier to accepting responsibility is this myth of incompatibility. And we're going to talk about that next broadcast. I hope that you join me tomorrow on the same time, same station. God bless you. Thank you for listening today.
Hickory Ridge Community Church is located at 3220 South Battlefield Boulevard, Chesapeake, Virginia. Sunday service times are at 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. We would love for you to join us. For more information, you go to our website at www.hrcc7.org. No matter what you're going through, remember, in Jesus Christ, there is always hope for your heart.